Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another comic book content creator conversation. And today I'm joined by Tyler from the Imaginary Access YouTube channel. So, Tyler, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So before we get into kind of what Imaginary Access is all about and how it got started, I always like to ask people when they come on the show for the first time, sort of about their history with comics. So did you grow up reading comics? Were they a part of your childhood? Give us your secret origin, as it were.
You know, I guess the short answer to that is yeah. I suppose I've read comic books from a pretty early age because I don't quite remember when I started reading them. If I had to guess, I was not super into reading as a kid. So I'd have to imagine I probably saw the cartoons first, and that inspired me to actually pick up a comic book at some point. And I really wish there was something I could say, oh yeah, this was the comic that really got me into it, but it's been going on for so long that I just couldn't tell you anymore.
Gotcha. What, were there certain cartoons? I know a lot of people that for them, the gateway was Batman animated series or the X-Men. Was there a certain cartoon that you remember as introducing you to the characters?
Like I said, these are characters I've just known about my entire life. I have an embarrassing story that involved me dropping my pants in public by accident, and I was wearing Superman tidy whities. I had to have been like 5 or 6. So I've clearly known about these characters for about as far back as my memory goes. But I have a lot of very fond memories of Batman, the animated series specifically. I had Batman pajamas that I would run around in that had like feet in them and stuff like that when I was really little. And I think Batman was sort of my first favorite superhero, and that was in no small part due to Batman, the animated series, because, again, I wasn't super into reading as a kid, aside from comic books, so I'd imagine I probably first caught on to it with the animated series, and I watched that series up until Justice League Unlimited ended, and, you know, looking back, I wish there were more episodes, but as a kid, I do think it ended at about the right time, because I remember when Justice League Unlimited came to an end, I was kind of the mindset of, okay, yeah, I think I've seen enough of all these characters.
So. Gotcha. Well, how did the YouTube, well, first of all, tell us about your YouTube channel, Imaginary Access, then we can talk about how that came about.
Sure. I run a YouTube channel called The Imaginary Access, where our main focus is essentially on dissecting popular culture and fiction and seeing what it can teach us about reality. There are some exceptions to that. Occasionally I'll do some video on like every Thor versus Hulk fight ever or something like that. That sort of lore keeping that's sort of lore keeping stuff though, that I would say definitely came secondary. And I think still comes secondary. It's a channel about learning more about our reality by studying other realities. And I think it's a really fun concept.
Yeah, it is. And you know, I'm very fond of saying on this podcast, as my listeners will tell you, that I very much love comics that make you think, and you're really taking that to the next level. You're taking these concepts that, you know, are fictional, whether they be from comic books or video games or, you know, other cartoons or other media, and extrapolating those out to, you know, how they relate to our own, you know, actual reality and physical world. So, give us an idea of how you came up with the concept and how you got it off the ground.
I'm sorry. I feel like all of my answers are uninteresting, but it really was something of a fluke. I've probably told this story 2 or 3 different ways because there are a number of things that really feed into it, but I was a teacher at the time that the Imaginary Access became like a big enough deal for me to, you know, for it to be worth bragging about a little bit, I suppose. So I was used to trying to teach kids a bunch of different, you know, science, math, history, whatever. And I was always personally a little annoyed by how boring it always was. Because if you look at, say, a word problem. Word problems are never any fun. And I've always felt like they had infinite potential to be. It'll be something like you're mixing sand and cement. And it's like, okay, that's about the least compelling thing you could have hit me with to try and figure out the answer to your question. And there was always something in me that wanted something closer to, oh, how does Superman fly? See, that immediately gets your gears turning a little bit. Right. Like, yeah, I had never thought about that. Or how fast does the Flash go? You can really talk about some interesting concepts by asking these questions that are infinitely more interesting to, you know, a lot of people. I almost said kids, but I wouldn't even say my audience is particularly aimed at kids. It's really got more of a high school, college demographic. People find what we're talking about fascinating. And it's a way to teach them about the real world without having to get down to, okay, so assume that you're an engineer, even though you've never told me anything indicating you wanted to be an engineer. Those are things, when someone becomes an engineer, for example, it's a progressive thing most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time they slowly learned more about the components of being an engineer over time, and they became fascinated with each little tidbit that goes into it. And then it was all eventually rolled up into one career. And that's how you get fascinated with the subject. You can't just start off with immediately dropping someone in, assume you're an engineer and you're doing this, because they don't have any connection to it. So instead, we're using pop culture icons and questions to sort of connect people to these ideas about how your world works and how reality works. And hopefully you find it fascinating enough that, you know, you can eventually sort of springboard off into your own path of science or philosophy or English, whatever we're studying. So that's one perspective on how the whole thing got started. But another perspective that's much simpler is I wanted to know how Superman could fly, because to my knowledge, it had never really been answered in any definitive way. And no one online was telling me how. So I just made a video about it and people seemed to enjoy it.
So from that first video, did you think, hey, this could really be something? And or was it a little more gradual in terms of, you know, getting equipment and figuring out, you know, this could actually be something?
I'd say it's always been gradual to a certain degree, because I've liked filmmaking as far as what you can call what I'm doing, filmmaking. excuse me. I've liked filmmaking for a long time. I used to make these sort of amateur skits and stuff when I was younger. So there was probably something always in the back of my head saying, you know, there's a chance this could blow up and I could really make something out of this. And that's why even as far back as the very first episode, you can sort of see I have sort of a very amateur logo going on, and I have like branding sort of happening with what I'm doing. It wasn't the primary motivation, like, oh, hey, everyone's going to love to know how Superman flies and this is going to really cause us to take off. But it was definitely in the back of my head, like, hey, if people really enjoy this, I love making videos, I'd be happy to come back and do more. But yeah, I was in college when that was going on. So it was sort of secondary priority, I would say.
So how do you decide what you're going to cover? Is it just you like consuming media and you come across something that you're like, oh, I wonder how that would work in the real world? Like, how do you come up with your ideas for what you cover?
It's been a very organic process up until very recently. It's been solely, people sometimes ask, you know, why don't you put out videos more frequently? And a lot of it has to do with, I don't feel like I want to come to the table unless I have something to bring to the table. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And often I they're very deep dives too. There are a few videos that I'm proud to say I was either the first person to really talk about whatever we're talking about, or at least one of the first, or the first high profile. I don't typically hit on something that's been done to death. So it's a matter of sort of like the first Superman video. It's a matter of, oh, hey, this is something interesting that I'm reading about or that I'm seeing on TV or that's just come up in the back of my head. And I go, I wonder if anyone's talked about this. You look around, you're like, no, not really. Or maybe a few people have, but it hasn't been, there's not one area where it's all been condensed into an easily consumable thing. And I'm like, well, I could do that then. So it is very much born of immediate fascination and just my brain sort of, the gears start turning when I see something on television or read something in a comic book. And there are also, but at this point, I would say there are a myriad of things that I sort of just have stockpiled, where I'm like, I'd really like to talk about this someday if I have the chance. And we're actually, the Imaginary Axis is actually has some pretty big plans for 2021. We want to churn out content much more consistently. I'm going to try to sort of take this to the next level. And for that reason, I did early on in the year sort of go to the whiteboard in my room and write down something like 50 different things that I really wanted to talk about, just ideas that had popped up in my head since I started doing the Imaginary Axis. And we're going to try to hit as many of them as possible. So initially it was curiosity of just whatever I'm watching or whatever I'm consuming. But as the Imaginary Axis has become more serious and I've had more time and more resources to devote to it, it has turned into, well, let's go out and find the question ourselves, you know?
Yeah, no, once you decide that you're going to cover something, how much research and time goes into feeling like you have a good grasp, and maybe it changes from subject to subject, but how much time between, okay, this is what I'm going to cover, then you have to research it, and then you're actually at a point where you feel comfortable creating the content?
It varies drastically, like to an enormous extent. There are some times when I'm like, a good example is I did a video on How Strong is Spider-Man, and that was one where I basically knew everything except for what boat Spider-Man was holding together at the very end of the video. So I had to look up the boat, and then I figured out about how, well, it was a ferry, but whatever. People are going to nitpick me on my terminology, but I looked up things like what a freight train weighed, what the ferry weighed, and everything else I already kind of knew. And any research was just sort of covering my tracks to make sure I didn't misremember that fact.
Right.
But I knew most of it already. So the research was pretty simple. Then there have been situations where I started out on something and it led me down a rabbit hole I was just never expecting to fall into. And that goes on for who knows how long. The two best examples for that are the Joker video and the Dark Side video. Initially, when I was doing the Joker video, it was just a fun idea of, oh, I'm going to diagnose the Joker. I'm going to figure out what's wrong with him mentally. And then I sort of poured through the books and I came to the conclusion, I came to a few different conclusions about, well, either he doesn't have anything wrong with him, or what's wrong with him isn't on the books, or the way that DC is dealing with it is different than we were perceiving. Like, I had a few different ways to analyze it. And then as I was writing the script, it all sort of came together for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, wait, this explains everything. And then it led to the entire ending being rewritten. Then the Dark Side one, I thought it was going to be pretty simple at first because I already sort of understood via Final Crisis and a few other pieces of work that Darkseid was supposed to be this multiverse spanning entity, and segments of him existed in each universe. And it really played into how Grant Morrison messes with string theory and a bunch of other things. It all made sense if you knew a thing or two about theoretical physics and Grant Morrison's obsession with it and some things that are mentioned in a few bits. But then I started looking into Neoplatonic concepts while I was researching all of that. And that just, the subject ended up being way bigger than I had ever initially intended, which is why it had to be two parts. And frankly, if you put both of them together, it's nearly a movie. And I still didn't have everything. I still didn't say everything I wanted to say. There were a few bits I just, because you can't keep an audience around for too long. I mean, I guess you can. These days, videos are popping up on YouTube. They're like 50 minutes long. But I know my numbers, and I know generally speaking about when people tend to sign off. Right. And both of the Dark Side videos were too long, and I still have a handful of miscellaneous stuff that I either could only allude to in the script because I didn't have time to out and out say it, or I just straight up never got a chance to get into it.
Right.
And it made me regret a little bit because at the end I was like, well, maybe I should have just shoved it in anyway, but I'd already decided I'm definitely not making a part three. These are too long. And I didn't want to make a little update video either, but we do have plans to sort of, in a way, cycle back around to it and answer some of those later this year. So
gotcha.
I'm sorry. I know that sort of went off topic, but no, my answer to the question is it varies a lot. And in a couple examples, it got so bad that as I was writing the script, I fell further down the rabbit hole and had to revise everything.
No, I mean, that's great info. It's always the struggle. because sometimes, yeah, we have podcasts that go on, you know, super long, and it's the same. It's a little easier when it's just audio, you know, you're listening in your car, or you can come back to it later. A little different when it's video as well.
You know, very recently, I have determined about an average number about how long it typically should take to write and research a video. And I don't want to say what it is because it's still sort of in testing, but if I'm right about it, then I'm hopefully going to be able to use it as a sort of clock in, clock out method to get scripts done much faster. And I think fans will be really happy for that because our videos are so rare right now that I think people would really like to see them more frequently.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about next, kind of the reception. Do you feel like you've already built a pretty faithful community that, you know, it's kind of grown sort of beyond what you initially, you know, thought it would be, just random people checking in? Is there really a sense, like, you see it's the same viewers coming back and things like that?
Yeah, well, of course, I never expected really much of a community to take off at all. Like I mentioned at the beginning, there was sort of that idea in the back of my head, well, you know, we'll establish some branding stuff in case it does. But it was always kind of a pipe dream of like, hey, it'd be really great if, you know, all of a sudden this got 2 million views. No one ever expects that to happen, or at least I didn't at the time. Maybe some people do. Today, yeah, I think that I have a community. I don't think there's any other way to explain how I can disappear for months at a time and still get a good reception. I think that most people were probably, if I was just being viewed by random people who happened to see me and click on the one video, it probably wouldn't have the consistency it has. My viewers, the imaginary friends, are some of the best people as far as I can tell, because I've really worked hard to try and keep positive vibes in a lot of my videos and to promote sort of positivity, not by sort of preaching it or anything like that, but I try to end everything on a really optimistic note. I try to keep a sort of sunnier composition in everything, even when we're doing stuff like, even when we're doing things like Darkseid or The Endless, really dark concepts. I try to sort of put a smile on everyone's face at a couple times. And I think it's worked out because I don't ever hear about them causing trouble anywhere or anything like that. No one goes to other videos and says, you know, like, Tyler disagrees with your video, you suck, or anything like that. They're pretty great. And they're also fantastic for being so patient with me, because like I said, I will disappear for months at a time, and they are so loyal. They always come back, and they're always very supportive of what I'm doing. Every now and then I'll get people who are like, well, I wish you'd put out content more. Guys, I know I'm really trying. No one wants to put out content more frequently than I do. It's just, it's a struggle. There are a lot of things going on in my life. I hope you understand. And thank you to everyone who's so patient.
Yeah. I mean, that's always the struggle, having enough time. When you can do something, you know, full time, then great. But a lot of us, we can't do these podcasts and YouTube things full time, because, you know, we got to pay the bills. It doesn't always work out that way. But I did see recently you had Scott Snyder on, or at least semi-recently, which I thought was great, because so often at times you're covering these concepts, you know, how fast is Flash, how fast is Superman. You have the creators who work on these characters and are telling stories in these imaginary worlds who may not even be thinking about it from that perspective of how this would really work. So do you hope to do more of that in the future, have people come on that are sort of the storytellers with these concepts?
Oh, I really do. It's very important, just for the health of the industry, for there to be a constant conversation going between the fans and the writers. But more to the point, it's very helpful with my videos, which are asking sort of these wacky questions. Sometimes if you can actually get a creator, you know, on call, then they can answer it. And I have done a couple videos that are closer to like theories. They're sort of like, you know, guessing, but most of my videos tend to have a pretty definitive, like, we kind of nail the subject by the time we get to the end. And being able to speak to the writers is absolutely necessary to that. I don't want to make it seem like it's entirely about me getting my answers, though, because you can see, like, when I spoke to Scott Snyder, for example, I asked him about a lot of things that have, frankly, nothing to do with anything I was working on at the time. It's just, I'm fascinated by their stories, and I'm fascinated where their mind is when they're talking about this stuff. And I think that a lot of the fans are too. They like hearing those sorts of things. My only critique on the situation would be, well, I guess I have two. I've been pretty bad about my camera setup in a couple of them, and the visuals are always absolutely terrible when I invite anyone on to do an interview. But secondly, I sometimes have real trouble getting in contact with these guys. Not all of them, but Scott Snyder, for instance, I spoke to that guy. I was in his DMs for like probably a year or something. And that's no knock against him or anything, but I thought I was annoying him. I was really sure that he was like being bothered by me. Yeah, sometimes I have trouble getting in contact with them, but I do absolutely love talking to them. They're writing the stuff that I enjoy. So, you know, there's no shortage of questions to ask.
Yeah. And what I find interesting too, is a lot of times when you get a chance to talk to these creators and yeah, like Tyler says, everybody's busy. And so it can be tough, can be challenging. And obviously, you know, I'm always respectful in terms of deadlines always come first. And, you know, if you have time to talk to me, then that's great. But a lot of times you come to them with an idea or a concept or a question about how this works in the real world. And I have found that it then sometimes sparks something in them where you're asking them about the way something works. They haven't even thought about it. And then that can lead to other story ideas and such. So I think it's just important to, as Tyler said, have this dialogue going back and forth with creators, because yeah, there may be something that you're asking about that then can lead them to story. Sometimes they've never thought about it. You know, they're job is to tell a story, not necessarily make it make scientific sense, right?
I think that people might be surprised to hear it, but I think that the narrative should always be paramount in these things. It's really much more important that you tell a compelling story than you explain every little thing and everything sort of connects. Sometimes there are breaks in canon that we can't really account for, and there are like scientific laws that are just kind of ignored, or this character is inconsistent or whatever. But you've got to understand that the point, this isn't an exercise in creating a functioning universe. We're telling individual stories, and that's sort of like secondary or a byproduct. And I sometimes have people come to me and being very pushy about how certain things are interpreted and how like, oh, how could you say this about that character when they did this over here? Or like, how do you possibly reconcile these issues? And I'm just like, look, the bottom line is sometimes the story needs to take precedence. Right. I had one person the other day who was trying to suggest to me that, I think it was Darkseid. He was trying to suggest Darkseid was much weaker than I was making him out to be. And his explanation was that Darkseid didn't use a specific power against a character during one instance when that would have solved Darkseid's problems for him. And I basically said, look, you got to accept that sometimes that's just the plot. Like if he did that and immediately ended the story, there'd be no story to tell. And he was like, but that makes Darkseid an idiot. And I was like, sometimes if the story is compelling enough, and if it's a good idea for a narrative, then it's okay to make a character act kind of like an idiot for a minute so that things work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can't nitpick it too much. In fact, I was talking to somebody recently. What were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about time travel and how, I don't know if you've read any of the House of X, Powers of X kind of reboot of the X-Men stuff, but it was the whole idea of Moira McTaggart, who has this mutant ability to reincarnate, but when she reincarnates, she goes back in time and she's born again. It's not like she's moving forward in time. And if you think about that too much, that's just magic at this point. There's no possible scientific explanation where when somebody, you know, if somebody's born in 1970 and they live, you know, 40 years and they die in 2010 and they die and then go back and they're reborn in 1970 and they live that loop over and over, there's no scientific explanation for that. So you can't think about it in terms of how this would physically have physics explain it or, you know, theory of relativity or anything like that. Don't think about it too much. Just enjoy the story, right?
I think it's fine to run those sorts of thoughts experiments. And in fact, that sounds exactly like something I'd do. Could you imagine if I put out a video like in a month or something explaining how that makes sense? Like, people would find that really interesting.
I'd be glad to watch it.
So there's nothing wrong with trying to make sense of it. I think that the problem comes in when you find something irreconcilable, like it doesn't make sense. There is no way to make, like you say, let's say, for example, that just off the top of my head, let's say that you're operating in a universe where it has been established that every time someone travels back in time, it creates a branching timeline. You've seen these types of things before, right? Like, so you can't actually affect anything. Let's say that that's how this universe works. But then some new villain of the week shows up and he travels back in time and he kills someone and then they stop existing in the present timeline. And so maybe you could go, wait, that doesn't make any sense. It's already been established that time travel works the other way here.
Right.
Just calm down. Just let it not make sense for a while. The point is the narrative. Like, right. When you come across things that are contradictory like that and there is no explanation, I feel like there are some fans feel like it's their job to sort of get up in arms and defend the canon or something like that. And it's just someone trying to tell a story at the end of the day. And it's like, you can try to find an explanation for it, but if you find there are none, just let it be and accept that these things never happened. It's a fictional story.
Right. Exactly. Has there ever been a question that you thought about, or you're like, hey, I have this great idea for an episode, and then you started researching it and you went, yeah, it has to be just fiction. There's not any scientific basis or no way to explain it.
No, I don't think I've ever done anything quite like that before. Usually the way that it works is if I find something and it's just, there's no logical way of explaining it, the solution is to attack it from a different angle. Like, okay, so you say it's not logically possible for someone to travel back in time and do X, Y, Z. Like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't mean to keep going back to the same hypothetical, but it's sort of a situation where if you find out there's just no way to explain it, that doesn't mean there's nothing to talk about.
Right.
There's still plenty of stuff that you can discuss, and you just need to tell the audience to accept the fact that this thing that doesn't make sense exists here. This happens an awful lot. Like, sometimes there will be a character will have a power that I can't really articulate because I don't know how it works. And by all means, it doesn't add up. It doesn't make any sense. But the solution is, well, the episode's not going to be about how that power makes sense because it doesn't make sense. Instead, we're going to talk about the power and talk about the ramifications it has on the world around it, or, you know, something like that. Let's say I had the power to, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something incredibly silly, something like if I had the power to send, if I had the power to fly, but only if I had cheese in my mouth. All right, that's absolutely ridiculous. And maybe if I research cheese enough, I can find some way that makes sense. But
right.
Let's say it doesn't. Let's say that's absolutely silly. It's nonsense. Okay, well, then the video isn't going to be how this makes about how having cheese in your mouth can make you fly. Instead, it will be about what scenario, like where is Cheese Mouth Man the most powerful? If we drop him into the Cheetos factory, what happened? We'll think of like a lot of different things that we can discuss instead.
I always wondered about Green Lantern rings. That to me just seems like magic. And it's kind of interesting because usually when you start talking about science fiction, it has the word science in there and people think, there must be some logical explanation. But when you get down to it, it's really this like a Green Lantern ring is sort of like an Aladdin's lamp, right? It's just kind of this magical wish ring. Whatever you can think, you can manifest, you know, at least for a short period of time. Is that something you've ever considered? I mean, maybe I'm putting you on the spot if it could actually ever work.
Your Green Lantern thing reminded me. Let me sort of reverse back to what we were just talking about.
Sure. Yeah.
There is a Green Lantern who is a sentient mathematical equation. And that is so nonsensical that I really spent some time one time trying to figure out if I could do anything with it. And I think the closest thing I came up with is you can sort of work out a mathematical equation that acknowledges that it exists in a way. And I was like, that's the closest thing I could get, though, because obviously that acknowledging you exist doesn't equate to sentience. But it was like, I was like, there's something to talk about there. If I ever decided to make a video on that, which I don't think I would, it's ultimately too brief of a topic. But we would start talking about how you can create an equation that acknowledges the equation's own existence. And see, that's sort of what I'm talking about, how we aren't necessarily going in to prove how math has sentience. Instead, we are now talking about something else by using that as a sort of springboard.
That had to be a Grant Morrison idea.
Yeah, it was. Anyway, let me get back to the actual question, though. The science behind a Green Lantern ring, I've looked into it a couple times, actually, but it seems like there's always something that distracts me and I never end up finishing what I'm working on. I think you can probably make it work, honestly. You have to sort of operate within the laws of the DC universe. But there's probably a method in which you can make sense of that. The first thing that, of course, you think about is E equals MC squared and this idea that sort of if we could transfer matter into energy and energy into matter, how what sort of constructs would we be capable of creating? But there are other issues with the Green Lantern ring that sort of escape me. How do you exactly translate willpower specifically? Like, is it like the, so you think, well, what is willpower? Willpower is like, you could possibly, if you needed to translate it into some material thing, it's probably equatable to some sort of a pattern in the neurons in your brain. And so you'll be like, is it somehow taking that is, and is the ring just, the ring isn't just activated by it, it's powered by it. And so you start, this is sort of how the entire research process works. I start like fishing in my own brain for like bits of things that sort of are kind of tangential and sort of make sense. To anyone listening, I'm fully aware that everything I've said right now is absolutely silly. Like the idea that you could power I'm not even entirely sure that you can equate any, like, if willpower, I'm not even entirely sure how you would map the different neuron powers of the different neuron patterns of specific will into something that creates energy. And even in the equals MC squared matter, I'd need to brush up on it to make sure I'm not speaking absolute nonsense. But you bat around with these ideas and you start to realize, okay, I have something tangible here. Right. Like, I sort of know that there is some way that we can transfer matter into energy, and I have kind of an equation that can help us talk about it. And I'm like, I sort of get how will manifests itself in the physical world. And I'm sure that if we extrapolate the science fiction out to assuming that the technology is incredibly, incredibly advanced, then we can probably play with that somehow. And these are the beginnings of an imaginary axis episode. You sort of have these little missing pieces and you actually do some research. You do some research into how emotions are reflected in the brain. You do some research into theoretical physics and you see if you can find a connecting thread between all of them. If I had to pick any specific thing that I would like to gravitate toward more, though, I think, because obviously, like I said, what I'm batting around right now is really high science fiction that is getting tiny, tiny bits of modern science involved. But there's definitely DC lore that we could look to explain what exactly is the Green Lantern energy and stuff like that. For example, in Sandman Endless Nights, it's revealed that Dream, one of the most powerful entities in the DC multiverse, is in a romantic relationship with one of the ancestors of the Guardians. Why am I forgetting their names?
Maltosians?
Maltosians? Yeah, the Maltosians. Sorry. I don't know why my brain skipped a beat there, but I was like, I know it starts with a Maul. But he's dating like one of their ancient ancestors, and she claims that she has found some sort of force of energy that they're calling the glow, and they're sort of slowly learning to manipulate it. And that feeds into Green Lantern lore and mythology that, you know, over enough time, they really refined their ability to control the glow and found out that it's related to willpower, and they made a giant power battery, etc. So you'd then need to like look into what the glow is, and if it's supposed to be some sort of a manifestation of will, then that brings us sort of into the metaphysics of the DC universe, where you get into these parts where certain gods and entities are actually just manifestations of higher dimensional constructs that exist in some sort of a Neoplatonic realm. And we could definitely follow that string far enough and figure out what exactly Green Lantern energy is, how it manifests itself. And I'd bet that there's a string there that will connect you through the various eras of canon. I think I had something like that in mind a while ago, but I never got around to it.
Yeah, they're fascinating concepts, and you can see why people love the Imaginary Access YouTube channel so much, because it's a way to relate these things to the real world. Do you do much? We've been talking a lot about DC concepts. Have you done much Marvel stuff? I feel like, I mean, we've always been told, at least, by Marvel themselves, that we're the world outside your window. We're much more grounded in reality. Do you find that to be true? Have you done much Marvel research?
Yeah, I've done Marvel. I do Marvel pretty frequently. I think that I was originally doing them at a consistency of something like one Marvel video per DC video, but DC has sort of taken over because Darkseid took over my life for a solid few months. I'm not going to help that either. I've got two videos coming out soon that are both DC related before I wrap back around to Marvel again. But no, I do Marvel all the time. They're both nonsense. Okay. but I suppose if I had to pin one as being more grounded, I probably would end up going with Marvel, because in the end, it's much more organized, would be a good way of putting it.
Right.
We've been talking about some like cosmic stuff here for a minute. Like, I'm talking about Darkseid, or how the lantern energy is connected to these emotional entities that are likely representatives of metaphysical concepts, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, I feel like I'm missing something, but I definitely knew something about the Neoplatonic origin of some of that stuff a while ago. And I guess I'd need to look back through my notes. I guarantee you there was something there. Okay. But anyway, back to my point. We're talking about high cosmic stuff right now, right? Marvel's cosmic ladder is so much better organized than DC's. it is like almost night and day. And that's why I've been spending a lot of time at DC recently, because I've been trying to piece together kind of a mess, where on Marvel's side, it's much more structured and there are less questions to ask. I think if I had to pick one, I'd probably say that Marvel tends to be a little bit easier to understand.
When you draw on things from other media, you know, whether you're doing TV shows or video games, are there certain shows that you like to cover, or certain? So what immediately comes to mind is like The Expanse, right? Like we're constantly told that this is, you know, hard science. And I know the writers of the books and whatnot, and the producers on the show, they try to get the science correct. So are there any shows like that or properties that you kind of enjoy consuming yourself as a fan more than others because it is that hard science, and also ones that you think that would be suitable for the channel would be a little easier, it wouldn't take you as long because they are rooted in actual scientific fact?
I don't think that a correlation with science is necessary for me to enjoy a story. It's really a shame. I pity anyone who feels that way. it's really a bad place to be in, where you feel like everything has to make sense. Otherwise, I can't enjoy the story. There's so much great art out there. Mm-hmm. There's so many. And also, a lot of it has meaning. Something doesn't have to fit in with science to have meaning. There are a lot of really fantastic stories with deep, substantive points to them that do not at all follow how our world works.
Right.
some of the best ones are like that. So no, I don't feel like there's any connection there. But also, part of the joy in doing the show is I like to sort of teach people about stuff that they didn't know or stuff that they weren't aware of beforehand. So if we're talking about a show where the science is already pretty laid out, it's usually something that there's not a ton worth talking about,
right?
Because they're already sort of explaining it to you. And I don't have a job there. I mean, maybe there are exceptions. Maybe I'm not approaching it creatively enough. So right now I'm working on a video about Persona 5, which is a great video game. And it delves a lot into how Carl Jung psychological theories and stuff like that. I think most people know that. I think most people are aware that there is a lot of Jungian stuff in those games, but I don't think they're aware to what extent. I haven't seen any place that really sort of gathers up all of the parallels and how accurately this world sort of reflects a lot of Jung's theories. And of course, there are other things that it completely leaves out, but the point is, it's not been out and out addressed anywhere. So right. There's a sense of, well, I could handle that. I could talk about that. People might find that fascinating. And that tends to be where I find myself. I find myself most frequently answering questions that no one else has either bothered to answer or hasn't answered to my liking.
Yeah, well, it probably goes back to what you were talking about earlier, having enough time. You know, I'm sure that if you had infinite time that you could tackle not only the questions you're most curious about, but also some of the you know, the smaller ones, you know, where yeah, maybe 90% of it is answered in the expanse of how this particular thing works or whatever, but there's always a little more that you can go to. But like you yourself said, there's only a limited amount of time. So well, we look forward to the increased frequency of videos this year. Is there anything that you specifically want to say in terms of, hey, look for this video coming at this time? Or are you still kind of in the early stages of putting together your schedule for this year?
We're still in the earlier stages, but I am pretty sure about when a few things are going to be releasing. We're definitely going to start things up near the end of February. I think at this point I'd be a little bit shocked if nothing came out by the end of February. I mean, don't hold me to that. I guess anything's possible, but I expect we'll have stuff out by the end of February, and I'm hoping that there will be things will be much more consistent for the rest of the year than they have been in like the last 2 or 3 years even. Because I'm putting a lot more of time and effort to it. And I've spent a lot of my downtime in the last couple of years sort of testing a lot of things. And I think we've got an idea for what direction we're going to go. So I guess you could call it a sort of rebirth of the channel or sort of a new launching off point. I'm not entirely sure. It's not like we ever went anywhere. We've still been producing stuff just at a very slow rate, but we're really going to be picking up probably around the end of this month.
Great. Well, we look forward to it, Tyler. It's been a pleasure talking to you. It's fascinating. I find your channel to be fascinating, answering these questions of these crazy concepts I never would have thought would have basis in reality. But there's always something. There's always a hook there, which you have very graciously told us about, especially even the Green Lantern thing. Like, I never would have gone to the whole E equals MC square, which makes perfect sense. The whole energy, yeah. matter to energy. Yeah, I get it. I love science. I'm a big science nerd, and obviously I love comics as well. So
to anyone listening, I just want no one go out and say that I've gone insane and I think that Green Lantern rings can exist. I was talking about the groundwork, like what I'd sort yeah, of
this is all this theoretical. Yeah, exactly.
One of the things that I keep having trouble with when I return to the Green Lantern rings is the way that they operate in regards to sound and light are so confusing. Like you can trap someone in a Green Lantern bubble, and even though they can't break through it, you can still hear them on the other side, and light passes through it apparently, but heat vision doesn't. I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to the thing you were talking about, dark side, you know, where, you know, somebody was complaining that he wasn't being consistent. Well, yeah, I mean, it's story first, consistency.
Oh yeah. One thing that I've completely just given up on is everybody in comic books can hear other people when they're talking and see other people when they're moving, even if they're all going faster than light.
Yeah, the Flash can be running.
Usually when the Flash is doing it, you just say, oh, well, it's Speed Force. But no, Superman can move faster than light, much faster than light, and he'll be flying much faster than light, and he'll say something to his son who's flying next to him, and he'll understand him, and they can see each other. Yep. And I'm very confused at what's going on.
Just the fact they're talking in space half the time, it's not consistent. So, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, don't think about it too much, everybody. So, anyway, like I said, Tyler, it's been great chatting with you. Why don't you let everybody know where they can find you on social media? And I will put a link to the Imaginary Access YouTube channel, everybody, as well as Tyler's social media in the show notes. But why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, Tyler?
Yeah, of course. I am on Twitter at Tyler at the Axis. I'm on Facebook at the Imaginary Axis. And I think I am also on Instagram at the Imaginary Axis, but I basically never use it. So you can visit there if you want to.
Great. Well, again, Tyler, so great to talk to you. Look forward to your increased content this year. Everybody go give Tyler a follow on Twitter, subscribe to his YouTube channel. A lot of great videos there already and more content coming later this year. So to you listeners, thanks for joining us as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.